You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome into Let's Edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. What a lineup we've got for you on today's show. Shaka Hislop, Stuart Robson and Craig Burley with me as we reflect on the 2019-2020 Premier League season. We'll start with Manchester United, of course, finishing third eventually, booking that place in the Champions League next season. This is what Ole Gunnar Solskjaer had to say after the game when he was asked about predictions of United finishing outside the top four and if it sends a message to his critics.
No, it didn't seem like you were expecting that because all the predictions were about sixth or seventh, so that's all right. If I'm getting criticised, that makes me just stronger and believe more in what I'm doing. So please don't praise me too much because you can be complacent. So that's just the way I've made it. But I didn't know until a few days ago because I was just reading through them. Just me and some of the staff were just discussing. So I think third with this team and the squad, where we've been, what with the rebuild, has been a massive achievement by everyone.
Craig, I feel drawn to you to start off with. You have been one of his harshest critics. Has he proved you wrong?
No. And the please don't praise me too much is laughable. You know, getting into third is not something for Manchester United as a club really to celebrate. But I suppose that's where the bar has fallen. Let me give you some figures here. Right, how many points, Dan, did United finish with this season? Do you know off the top of your head?
I don't.
I'm going to tell you. 66. Do you know how many points Man United had last season? 66, right? What's happened here? And by the way, when Mourinho took them to second, the year before, they had 81 points. So it's another one of their lowest ever tallies since Sir Alex Ferguson left the club. That's factual. What's happened here? And yes, Man United have got a little better on the eye. There's no doubt about that, particularly since the Fernandes signing. But what's happened here is the others have regressed. Tottenham are 12 points worse off than last season and Arsenal are 14 worse off last season. On top of that, Chelsea, and most of us sort of expected this, have had the lowest league points total since the 2015-16 season when they finished 10th. But that was kind of expected with the problems that Chelsea had, losing Hazard, having the transfer ban, bringing in an inexperienced manager. So most of us kind of figured on this show that Chelsea would struggle. I think most of us had Man United in the top four, which is, as Solskjaer says, a great achievement. But let me tell you, they have the same points tally as last season. They have a 33-point gap. And sorry to throw these figures at you, but they have a 33-point gap to Liverpool. And last year, there was a 32-point gap to Manchester City. So they've managed to get into the top three and the Champions League football. But the points are the same. They're a little better on the eye. There's no doubt about it. But praise for being 30-odd points off the lead? I don't think so.
Robbo?
Yeah, I would agree with Craig to a certain degree. They had that little purple patch a few weeks ago where they were playing some good football. I think the other sides didn't quite know how to deal with them at times. But I've watched their last four or five games, been at three of those games, including the Cup semi-final, when I'm not sure, if I was the coach, I'd be looking at going out to the side of the pitch and saying, you can't play out from the back because the opposition are pressing you. You've got to play longer. You've got to go into the front. And it looks to me as though Solskjaer, sitting on the side, just lets the game meander at times. And he's relying on the players to do outstanding things. Rashford might get a goal out of nothing. Martial might get a goal out of nothing. Fernandes is picking out his passes. But the game plan in the last four games, particularly against Southampton, particularly against Chelsea in the semi-final, they didn't know how to combat what the opposition were doing, which was a high press, or in Chelsea's case, being really compact and not allowing them to play through the middle. and Manchester United and Solskjaer didn't have to cope with that. And that's why they lost against Chelsea. And that's why they struggled in that first half against Southampton. Solskjaer needs to improve the tactical side of the game if he's to take Manchester United to the next stage.
Aren't we being a little negative here, though, Robbo, considering what they were 14 points?
Hold on. Should we be getting the streamers out and the pom-poms because they've finished third place and 33 points behind Liverpool, 15 points behind Man City, who were hopeless by their standards, who had a half a defence for the majority of the season? They couldn't defend. They played Fernandinho back there for 50% of the season. And we want to get the, oh, this is brilliant, Manchester United. Sorry, Robbo, to butt in. They had the same amount of points, 66, as they had the season before, when Solskjaer had 6 months in the job. So please spare me that, oh, don't start praising me, because Tottenham were hopeless, Arsenal were hopeless, and Chelsea struggled because of a squad. On top of that, we had little old Leicester, who hung about for a long, long time, but the injuries caught up with them in the end. Oh, but hey, let's throw a party, because Manchester United finished third, a country mile behind the top two. That's the point, Robbo. That is the point I think Stuart's making. Not that we're not saying, oh, finishing third is great, but how do you bridge that huge gap in terms of between Liverpool and City, in terms of your squad and your manager's tactical nous?
But the point of the matter is that you were saying they've got to get rid of him. If they're going to move forward, they need to do that.
And why would that not change? Why would that not change?
Because he's exceeded your expectations, surely, in that he's managed to get...
He's got the same amount of points
as last year. But he's got them into the top four. He's got the job done.
Because others regressed, Dopey. Others regressed. Tottenham imploded. Arsenal were hopeless. Chelsea had their hands tied behind their back and still made it into the top four. They haven't super exceeded expectations, Manchester United. They've got the same amount of points as last year. How many times do I need to say that? He has got to prove that he has the tactical nous to sit there and take on the best managers in the league and close that huge gap at the top. Not sit there and say in a paranoid way, oh, we read through the criticism and we sat there all thin-skinned. And look, we showed everybody. I'm sorry, you didn't show anybody. You pretty much did the same as last year, just with a little bit more swagger at the end.
Sorry, Craig, Shaka wants in again. What do you want, Shaka?
I was quite enjoying that rant. Listen, I understand everything that everyone is seeing. I'm even a little sympathetic to Solskjaer doing a little bit of a victory lap, given the criticism that he's come under and where they were in January. But Craig's right. Manchester United are a huge club. The fact that they're closer to Bournemouth than they were to Liverpool suggests that Solskjaer shouldn't be doing that much of a victory lap. The fact that they got into the top four by beating Leicester City on the last day of the season, the same Leicester City that over the years have only managed to keep hold of two of their big stars in Vardy and Schmeichel. They've lost Kante, they've lost Mahrez, they've lost Maguire to Manchester United, suggests that for as good a finish as it may seem on paper, Manchester United are a long way from where we expect them to be. I think many expect them to be, but given how low they set their own bar over recent years, you take what they give you this time around.
Listen, Dan, if Man United had toppled the two boys at the top, then we'd all be eating a bit of humble pie. Even if they'd squeezed themselves in between Liverpool and a very average Man City this season, I would have doffed my cap at them and said, that's a decent job. But to clamber into the top four in the last day of the season against teams that have faltered all year, the big teams that normally go in for it, is no way for a celebration lap. And I thought by his interview, by his words, his terminology, and the fact that he's sitting flicking through negative criticisms, telling me that next year he's going to be under big pressure, because we know Man City are going to go and spend, we know they're back in the Champions League, we know they're going to go out and beef up that back four, and Liverpool are not going to sit in their hands, so they've got it all to do.
When he proves he can do that and match those two, then he'll get the praise he deserves. Until then, I don't think so.
Just last word on this. Does anyone know how many points they got last season compared to
66.
All right, good, OK. Just...
Exact same as this season.
You weren't quite 66. Sure then, were you?
Well, you know, I had to check. Meanwhile, Chelsea booked a place in the Champions League as well with that 2-0 victory over Wolves. Of course, the big talking point leading up to kickoff was the fact that Kepa was dropped, Willie starting ahead of him. This is what Frank had to say about that decision after the game.
The idea that we haven't kept enough clean sheets is definitely not just a reflection of our goalkeeper. That's something that we have to work on as a team, look at as how we train and maybe how we recruit generally going forward. But I don't want to pinpoint it on Kepa today. Kepa's decision, as I said before the game, was a choice on probably recent form, a probably recent situation, a tough time for him. And I felt like Willie coming in with confidence off the back of his performance against Manchester United last week would be kind of what we needed today for the game. So I don't want to jump forward beyond the Arsenal game next week. It would be wrong.
He's gone, Xhaka. But the problem is, how do you get rid of him?
I don't know. But this is as clear a signal as I've seen from a manager, regardless of how long he's been in the job, that somebody is surplus the requirements. After you bring Kepa in last week and then now you drop him again for Willy Caballero, and given what Frank has said, there's no question in my mind anymore. And I know we speculated about this for some time, nor should there be any question in Kepa's mind, that Frank doesn't want him at the club. Mm. The challenge is, how do you get rid of him, given what you paid for him, given what his salary is, and given what you've seen from him over recent weeks? Who picks up that tab? I'm not sure that anybody does. I can only see a home for Kepa back in Spain somewhere. Where that is, I'm not absolutely certain. And nobody outside the top two would be willing to pay the kind of money that Kepa, I'm sure, would command. So Chelsea have to dip in their own pockets in getting him partially off of their books. That's not an easy sell.
Craig, this is something that we've talked about a lot. The whispers were there, weren't they, a long time ago, that Frank didn't really rate him. And that has obviously now exploded into the fact that you drop your keeper, the most expensive keeper in the world, for your most important game of the season.
Yeah, he's toast. He's toast. He's gone. I think even if Chelsea can't get rid of him, Frank Lampard's probably not going to play him. You know, Willy Caballero is a number two goalkeeper and has been for many a year now. That's the scenario that we're in. That Lampard is choosing a number two backup goalkeeper, as Caballero has been for a while, over the most expensive keeper on the planet in a game that he knew he might have to get something out of. Now, we know Willy Caballero is going to play next week anyway in the cup final because he's played in the cup games, but he wasn't going to give him a game, Frank Lampard, just to get him fresh and up to speed for the cup final. There was too much at stake. It was a huge call. But I think, again, Lampard has shown that he's not frightened to make these calls. And it could have backfired on him. It didn't. But Shaka's absolutely right. I think Lampard will be going to Peter Cech and saying, listen, you've got to work this out. We've got to get this guy out. But there's no way in hell that anybody is repaying Chelsea what they paid for him. If they want to do business to get him out, to get somebody else in, they're going to have to take a hit.
Let me just pick something up there that Craig just said. Willy Caballero is a number two, and that is absolutely right. Now, psychologically, mentally, there's a big difference between being a number one and knowing you're going to play week in, week out, and being a number two, as Willy Caballero is, and knowing that you play two or three games, and then you might be out for 6 or 7 weeks, and then you come in and do the same. That's where Willy Caballero is right now. He will be good for 2 or 3 weeks. He'll be solid, won't make too many mistakes. But if you play him over the longer term, I think you'll start to see a regression in those performances. And that is a challenge. Willy Caballero is a number two and will be a number two until he decides to hang up his gloves. Now, if you're coming in at number one, and let's just look around the Premier League, whether it's a Henderson or a Pope or somebody else who you can bring in who've shown that they can do it in this league, they're going to look at that and say, well, I want to get as much money as Kepa. Mm. And here's the challenge. Even if you can't offload Kepa, if you keep him on your books, nobody worth their salt of being a number one at a club like Chelsea is going to come in and say, well, I'm happy getting 50% of the money that Kepa's on because I'm playing at a big club like Chelsea. That's not going to last, even if you get them to do it for one season. So now all of a sudden you've got two goalkeepers on huge money, one a reliable number two. That's a lot to ask financially.
Has Lampard handled this correctly, Robbo?
Yes, because when you look at Kepa, there's three things that a goalkeeper needs. He's got to either be dominant when balls are coming into the box. If he's not dominant in the air, he's got to be a great shot stopper. If he's neither of those two, he's not a very good goalkeeper. But you're also looking for goalkeepers to be good with the ball at their feet. From what I've seen of Kepa over the last year, he hasn't been dominant in the air. He hasn't made up for that by making magnificent saves. And he's not very direct, or he doesn't make the right decision when he's got the ball at his feet. So that's why Frank Lampard, in a one-off game, he had to go with what he thought was going to be his best goalkeeper. And as the lads have just said, he's made a good decision. He's been brave enough to make that decision, Frank Lampard. He's shown that with the likes of Pulisic. He's shown that with Giroud, leaving him out for long periods before bringing him back. Frank Lampard's done a very good job, and I think he's done a good job with the goalkeeper, and he's on his way.
I think, Dan, the coffin lid was already down, but I think if there was any doubt about the nails being hammered in, there was a couple of occasions recently since the restart. The first one was at Palace with the Zaha goal, which, you know, looked from initial sighting or first view, that looked like a great goal. But when the replay came in, as good a strike as it was, it went in the centre of the goals. Mm. And here we have a goalkeeper that's 6'4". The second one was Liverpool, and it wasn't the Trent Alexander-Arnold free kick. It was great. It was the flapping around from crosses that Robbo just touched on there. There was one ball in particular that flashed across his 6-yard box in the second half against Liverpool, and it was audible that the Chelsea players were shouting, "Kepa!" because there was nobody in the ground. It was picked up in the microphones. And so clearly there is a lack of confidence from management and to his own players in the goalkeeper. And if the coffin lid wasn't already bolted down, then it certainly was after those two occasions. He's gone, and that's going to be an interesting watch to see what move and who Chelsea go for as their number one.
I may regret bringing this up. Chelsea got 66 points as well, Craig, this season.
Yeah. Well,
what did they get last season? 72.
Chelsea got their worst points. If you listen to the opening monologue, Chelsea got their worst points return since the 15-16 season, when they returned with 50 points and finished 10th. But that wasn't wholly surprising, bearing in mind it's only Lampard's second season in management, first season in the Premier League. And we've pointed this out many times. He lost one of the best players in Europe in Eden Hazard. And for the umpteenth time, they had a transfer ban.
But they had a ban, but they still brought in Pulisic. They still brought in a player. This transfer ban, I get it. But everyone's
that
saying...
He had a transfer ban.
Pulisic came in, didn't he? A £60 million player.
Let me tell you something, cloth ears. They had a transfer ban. There was one or two players came in. None of those players were signed by the manager. The manager had no room to maneuver in the transfer market. He inherited the squad. He made no changes to the squad because he couldn't. That is the point. Other managers around the league signed players at their will. Chelsea and Frank Lampard did not. But I making myself crystal clear?
He inherited a player who was player of the season.
You're
saying as if he's like some donkey. He brought in Pulisic, who was key to them being in the Champions League.
Well, not at the start of the season he wasn't.
But now it has been.
He was in and out of the team. You're arguing against yourself. Whether you like it or not, Chelsea had a worldwide transfer ban and Lampard used the squad this year that he inherited. Please tell me something that I'm saying that is factually incorrect.
But he inherited a squad that finished third last season, with the exception of Eden Hazard.
And he couldn't make any changes. And they lost Eden Hazard to Real Madrid and still finished in the top four.
In a dross league.
Please tell me where I'm factually incorrect.
But he finished fourth in a dross league and he didn't lose any defenders, yet you've gone from, what, 39 goals to 54 goals this season?
Yes. They've had problems at the back. He knows that. He's tried everything.
Listen, Frank Lampard, like Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, still has it all to prove.
Right.
I'm not arguing against that. I'm not saying Lampard is a better manager than Solskjaer. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying he had bigger problems. And both managers have got it all to prove that they can peg the gap between the top two. The fact is Solskjaer's been there longer and United are a bigger club. That's why I've been saying all along that there's a huge question mark, in my opinion, whether he is the man, even if they rebuild this squad, to peg that 30-point gap. Mm. That is my point. And it's not difficult to understand.
Robbo?
Well, what you have to say about Frank Lampard as well, what he's done well, he's changed his mind on players. The hardest thing in management is when you've made your mind up. Alonso, he didn't really want him. But eventually he has to change his mind. And if a manager's prepared to do that, it shows he's got courage. He didn't want Giroud anywhere near the team. He wanted Tammy Abraham in the team. But he still obviously man-managed it well enough so that when he needed Giroud, he came in and did well. He's done it with some of the other players as well. He left Jorginho out for several weeks and he's brought him back in. And Jorginho did OK, apart from that tackle against Liverpool. But he's had the ability to change his mind on players. And that's a difficult thing to do as a manager. So he's got some understanding of how to man-manage people.
Stubborn Stuart Robson, available on the Gab and Jules podcast. Jules on holiday, crying into his French wine about Mbappe. Robbo, though, stepping up. You can listen to the latest edition of the podcast, available on the website. Just a reminder then, this Saturday, Arsenal against Chelsea in the FA Cup final. Now, that game live, starting at noon Eastern on ESPN+. However, me and Craig will be over on ESPN2 at 11:30 for a comprehensive countdown to kickoff at Wembley.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Not long now then until the Champions League resumes. Bad news though for PSG supporters, as the club confirmed today Kylian Mbappe out for 3 weeks, which means he will definitely miss that tie against Atalanta in the quarterfinals. Obviously, Robbo, losing one of the biggest players in the world is a blow, but how big a blow? They should still be able to get through, shouldn't they?
It's a massive bonus for Atalanta because the three centre-halves haven't got a lot of pace. You know, looking at Toloi, Palomino and Jim Sissi, who play as the back three, and they go man-to-man. And against Mbappe, I think they'd have really struggled. So I think it's a major blow for PSG. He'd have kept on running in behind and it caused them problems. It wouldn't have allowed Atalanta to play the way they wanted to and control possession. They couldn't play high up the field. So I think it's a massive blow for PSG, but a great bonus for Atalanta. They think they've got every possibility now because they're playing some good football at the moment.
Di Maria suspended as well for that game, Craig. Does the fact that Mbappe is injured change things completely?
Well, as Robbo pointed out, it changes a lot for Atalanta. I mean, if it's not Neymar, it's Mbappe. They just seem to be getting these injuries at real crucial times in the season. But the bonus is it takes some pressure off them defensively because that's been a problem for Atalanta. That's their Achilles heel because they've got 96 goals in Serie A. That's 20 more than the nearest side. And they haven't been beaten down since January. So when we say, oh, this should be quite comfortable for PSG, I don't think it was quite comfortable even with Kylian Mbappe.
because this Atalanta side, they're pretty good.
Shaka?
Yeah, listen, I've seen Atalanta sit in and defend and do so quite well, but you don't get the other side going forward when they do that. They're at their best when they play on the front foot. I think the biggest aspect to this game, certainly negatively for PSG, is the fact that Ligue 1 shut down with the quarantine and PSG haven't been playing competitive football since. I know they've been playing in the French Cup and they've been trying to fill their time with friendlies, but friendlies are friendlies. This is a totally different scenario for them. Added to that now, Kylian Mbappe being out, I think that pegs PSG back even further. With Kylian Mbappe, I think PSG had a chance, every chance. Without him, I think Atalanta are favourites.
So who's going through, Shaq?
Right now, I'm leaning Atalanta.
Really?
Because of the players. Yeah, because of the players that they're missing, as we said. But most importantly, because they're playing competitive football. And that, for me, will be telling in terms of just keeping it close if this game goes on anywhere past the hour mark. I expect PSG to start to fade, and I expect Atalanta to be at their best.
Craig, Atalanta have scored lots of goals in Italy, apparently, so far this season. Who are you backing?
Yeah, well, they're sitting third, Dan. I like to give you some facts so that you're up to date. I agree with Shaka. I think the match fitness is going to be a big telling point, and the fact they're such a big threat going forward. I'm going to go for Atalanta, and I think Tuchel's coat is already on a shaky peg. And he's not going to turn to the PSG board if they go out and say, well, listen, this is a decent side in Serie A, because PSG are going to have to rise above that if they want to win this competition. But I fancy the Italians, and I think in many people's eyes, that could be a huge upset.
But player to player, they're much better, PSG, aren't they, Robbo? But are you backing Atalanta as well?
No, I'm backing PSG just about. I think if PSG stop Gomez playing, and they stop the ball going into Zapata, who are two excellent players for them at the moment. Ilicic isn't quite fit, who's a key player for them as well. I still think that, as you just said, PSG have got better players. I think they'll work hard defensively to stop Gomez getting on the ball and wandering around the field, and they will still catch Atalanta on the counter-attack. So I'm just about going with PSG.
Good stuff. Thank you very much, gents. Be sure to join us on Extra Time, where we revisit Robbo's prediction that Zidane would be sacked 6 weeks into La Liga season.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
Take a look at this. This is Mark Ogden's team of the season. You've got to say some controversial calls from him regarding the best 11. Danny Ings is excluded. Laporte's in, but of course suffered an injury throughout most of the campaign. Well, he will be joining us on the next edition of the show to react to the criticism, and there's been a lot of it regarding this questionable team of 2019-2020. Well, that brings us to the end of today's show. As always, thank you very much to everyone who has been on. Stay tuned. Extra Time with Shaka, Craig and Robbo. Robbo publicly apologises for his terrible take on Zinedine Zidane last year. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you very much, as always, for your tweets. Shaka, Craig and Robbo with us to answer some of them. Robbo, is Brendan Rodgers a bottler of a coach? Somehow did not win Liverpool the title in 2014 and now missing out on top four when you're 15 points behind fifth. I understand they had injuries, but still.
Yeah, you have to wonder what they were doing in lockdown, because when they came out of lockdown, they didn't look as though they were particularly fit. They didn't have their game plan quite as organised as they were before the lockdown, where they were an exceptional side. But you have to go back to their injuries. I don't think he's a bottler. Some of the injuries, Ricardo Pereira was the biggest loss. The right back, I thought he was the second best right back in the Premier League. He's out. Soncoy, who didn't play in the last couple of games, he's been excellent at centre-half. And Chilwell, who was outstanding at left-back. So three of the back four were out for those last couple of games, and Ricardo Pereira longer than that. So I think you have to go back to the injuries. That's why they didn't stay in the top four.
He did win everything at Celtic, didn't he? He's not that much of a bottler, surely. Should referees speak to the press after the match so that they're somewhat accountable for the decisions they make, Shaq?
Yes, they should. You've seen other leagues do it, and to very good effect. We all understand that referees make mistakes from time to time. You're also not sure, quite sure how they interpret certain situations. If they speak to the press, at least you get a better feel for that. I think when they do make mistakes, or they perceive to make mistakes, and you hear nothing from them, it opens it up for all kinds of interpretation, including arrogance. I think it works well when the press have spoken. We've seen them do it in Australia, for example, has been received very well.
Craig, would you like to hear from referees after the game?
No, and I really don't think... I don't see the point, because I think it would be a never-ending circle, because you get in a room of journalists, or whether it be a TV or radio interviews, and where do you draw the line? Well, why did you give that decision? Well, what about that tackle in the 27th minute? Well, what about that? And you end up just having to over-explain things. At the end of the day, they make decisions based on their judgment. Clearly, as you know, there's human error in there. The only annoying thing I have at the moment is the continual lack of going over to the monitors to referee the game from on site. That's the only issue I have with the refereeing at the moment. I really not bothered about them explaining it after the game. If they've made a mistake, they've made a mistake. What are you going to gain from sitting there trying to explain it to everybody?
Robert, you were commentating on the Brentford game yesterday. Obviously, we're at the playoff stages of the Championship. Why on earth do they not have VAR in these games? It doesn't seem to make any sense.
They don't have them in the Championship, so they don't have them in these games. But there was two decisions that were wrong. The penalty, I didn't think was a penalty to start with, because he got touch on the ball and didn't get any touch on the player. And the sending off changed the game. You know, Brentford could not get promotion to the Premier League because of that sending off.
Sort it out, Robert. Get VAR sorted for the final.
In my view.
It seems ridiculous. They don't have it. Why does
that? Well, that's just stupid, because, you know, because they didn't have it during the normal league season. When we get to a playoff scenario, which is clearly, you know, it's another round of games, nothing to do with the league. The league's done. Yep. People are relegated. People are promoted automatically. People are mid-table. These teams have now earned the right to be in there fighting for one spot that's going to change their club potentially forever, financially anyway. And yet, we can't put VAR in there because we didn't have it during the normal season. That's the kind of stupidity that we have in this sport. Not that the fact that, you know, referees should come over and explain themselves, because, for example, there, Rob was saying the referee made a couple of mistakes in the game. What's he going to do? Come over and explain why he's made those mistakes? That's not gaining anything for anybody. But the problem is the VAR and the technology and how they use it in England. That is the biggest issue.
Shaka, why does Dan continue to deny you your... why does Dan continue to deny Shaka from giving the fans his power rankings? I have nothing to do with this,
Dan,
by the way.
Why do you continue to deny the fans that wish?
I hear you are not replying to emails that are entitled Power Rankings, Shaka.
Correct.
that's not at all true. I haven't received any emails titled Power Rankings.
If there's any emails, text messages or voicemails that have rankings in there,
then
he's got an automatic built-in delete button that just says, no chance.
Right, let's get to the business end of things, Robbo. When will Stuart Robson publicly apologise for his horrific takes disrespecting Zidane as a manager last fall? How are viewers expected to ever take him seriously again?
Well, probably not. No, I apologise profusely. Zidane, I thought at the time, wasn't doing particularly well. The team looked as though they were all over the place. They had a poor couple of Champions League games. They were beaten easily in the pre-season games. They looked an absolute shambles. Bale was having his problems with the manager. The manager wanted him out. That was all going wrong. The same with James Rodriguez. That was all going wrong. And it looked as though it was a ship that was sinking. But the players and Zidane got it all together. It helped that Barcelona didn't play particularly well this year. But I apologise to Zidane because he's eventually shown a great deal of man management. I'm not sure he's the best coach in the world, but his man management of very good players seems to be exceptional. And he did well to win the title.
I don't know. What's the worst take? You saying that about Zidane or Craig saying that United should have sacked Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and now he's led them to third in the table?
Huge.
I say Craig got it more wrong than I did.
Huge. I mean, huge to third in the table. Oh, and a massive points total of how many? 66 points. Oh, there's only what? 11 wins behind Liverpool. 33 points. Wow.
Just going back to Madrid for a moment, Robert, it does show that pre-season friendlies really do mean nothing.
It wasn't just based, it was based mainly on what we saw pre-season, but there were two or three games right at the start where they didn't play well. Remember when they played, I'd done Bruges in the qualifying round of the Champions League. Then Bruges were, I think, a couple of goals up against Real Madrid in the Champions League, and they were totally caught on the counter-attack. They looked all over the place at one point. They didn't look fit. It looked as though they hadn't done any proper work. They didn't look as though they had any tactical idea. And suddenly it all came together, and you have to give him credit for that. You know, we talked about Lampard turning things around and changing his mind on players. Well, Zidane has changed the way Real Madrid played after six games, and he did a good job.
So you're saying Lampard is on a par with Zidane?
Not yet, no. No, not in terms of... Probably his man management is good. He's still got a little bit of work to do, probably tactically. And he's still got a little bit of work to do to make him a top-class manager. Maybe one day he'll manage Real Madrid.
Well, maybe. And win four Champions Leagues.
This. I've got to say, I love this public apology kind of thing. Yeah. Public apology for having an opinion that...
It wasn't really an apology, though. I like how Rob was saying. I mean, Zidane's a good manager. I still think he's a terrible coach, though.
Do these people actually think or people are going to publicly apologise for having an opinion and maybe somebody proves you wrong? I mean, surely that's better than sitting watching these mundane shows and analysis programmes where people sit in the fence for months and months and months until something actually goes well with the club and then they go, oh, I said that was going to happen. No, you didn't. You sat in the fence at the time and said, well, I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. How boring are they?
Seems like fans are forgetting the three-month break, Robbo, and are complaining the off-season is so short. The players will be fully fresh by the beginning of the season, correct?
Yeah, they should be. I mean, they've had a little spell of a lot of games in a short space of time. The players that go to the Champions League, well, the clubs that are in the Champions League won't have that much of a break, but some of the other ones will have a decent break. I don't think it's a problem for the players. They've had their rest in the lockdown. They'll have a little rest now, probably a month, before they start their training again. I don't think it should be a problem. The players should be fit come the start of the season. The problem might be at the end of the season with those players going to the European Championship.
Dan, if we have any of these discussions during the season when it all starts up again,
yeah.
If anybody comes on, if anybody's out there being quoted, I've moaning about players, about fitness, about tiredness, about lack of breaks, we're just going to absolutely muller them. Because as Rob was, we talked about this last week, the players, after harping on, management harped on about rest and winter breaks, they had 3 months. They had 2 to 3 months complete rest. Complete rest. Then they had some pre-season training. Then they did have a concertinaed program. But then they're going to get a rest again. And then we crack on. I had Champions League players slightly different. Slightly. But even that's been redone to knock out football rather than the two games they would have had. So let's hope we're not having a discussion when the season 2020-21 season restarts about sports scientists saying the players are tired, right? Let's not have it.
Is there a difference between a concertina and an accordion?
Well, I don't know why.
No, I'm just interested. I haven't heard concertina for a while. It made me think accordion.
Well, you haven't heard it for a while because now every now and again I just try and be a wordsmith.
Well, yes, concertina.
And I bring things out there.
I thought my first car was a concertina.
Oh.
Constantine, I like to bring these words out, Dan, that educate yourselves.
That's nice. Robert needs to publicly apologise for that
joke.
Like,
you know, profligate.
You know, right, that's it.
I mean, you were out having dinner with John Champion the other night. Surely yep. You've got some big words.
Final point. Would Shaka like us to start a GoFundMe to get him an AC unit? I can't watch him suffer any longer. Because it's very loud, Shaka.
I have an AC unit, but you keep making me switch it off, Dan.
What, because it's really loud?
Yes. And these lights, I have lights here, the lights are roasting hot. You don't let me switch my AC on, we expect. And I can't even do my power rankings.
Oh, it's a hard life.
I've got no lights here. I had our colleagues come round again today to take the television. They brought it, not my television, but the television that they put in. They came here, they spent 3 hours, about 3 months ago, fitting this 70-inch TV in as a backdrop upstairs in one of the bedrooms, and we used it 3 times.
Oh.
And what am I doing? Down here, this is down here, sitting in front of the fireplace.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
What are they going to do with the TV now? They're going to sell it down the market.
No, they've taken it off somewhere else where somebody else probably won't use it.
Right.
One of our deportist colleagues or something, I don't know. So they came round, whipped it away.
Yeah.
And that's what we're left with. I could have done that back. I could have saved them the hassle.
Of course. There you are.
I mean, I built this behind me.
Yeah, right.
I built it in 4 weeks, this wall.
Yeah, right. God.
I did, Robbo. Look at it.
You're the laziest man alive. You don't even
look at that. That's not bad.
Stevie came round to help.
yeah, you can see all the... Oops, you can see the Budweiser cans up there, can't you? That's how you know he's been.
And Robbo's got pretend bookcase behind him. Never read any of those books, have you, Robbo?
I've read quite a few, and they're all gardening books, let me tell you.
Oh, God.
Showing his age now.
That's it. Thank you very much. We'll be back tomorrow for more. Until
just
then,
remember...
What's that? 66 points.
Correct.
Concertina. Profligate. That's it. We're done. Bye-bye.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.